Waka, good morning everyone, and welcome to a special bilingual Kuskokwim Salmon Management call-in show. I'm Akumgachik John Active, along with KYK News reporter Charles Unachilgaya Enoch. Our guests today are Ray Bourne. He's with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife. He's the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Deputy Refugee Manager, Yakuliagihta. Jalituuna, we have Aaron Tiernan. You're with the Alaska Department of Fish and Game and Area Biologist, Albert Lamont Albertson, Kuskokwim River Salmon Management Working Group. Pardon? Is that correct? Lamont Albertson, Kuskokwim River Salmon Management Working Group, and the Kuskokwim River Intertribal Fish Commission. And Greg Rozicka is here with the Kuskokwim River Intertribal Fish Commission. Welcome all.
Welcome. Thank you.
Good morning. Good morning.
If you have any questions, listeners, about the fishing season and management, please call 543-5985 or 543-2756. And from the villages, a toll-free number, 1-800-995-8954. Well, we're into summer, and we, of course, hear that the fish are here, but we haven't seen any. Some of us haven't tasted any, but some have, that get them from their friends and relatives lower down, way down river. But perhaps one of you, maybe Ray, you can begin by telling us how the fish are doing down there. I mean, test fishing and stuff.
Actually, I think Aaron Turner may be a better choice for
Aaron,
that.
Aaron, right.
Yeah, hi, good morning. excuse me. Test fisheries have been in the water since the later part of May. And we've been catching Chinook since we started test fishing here at Bethel. The fish are, you know, starting to build a little bit. And then we also have a lower river tagging project down by Fowler Island that's also been catching decent numbers of salmon as well.
That's good news. We already have a caller. We're going to go to it right away so we can start. They'll probably have questions regarding this. We have John from Bethel. Good morning, John.
Oh, good morning. I got no question for anybody, but I want to say something to everybody there that in 1960s, you know, when I was just a teenager growing up, there was fishing every single day. I mean, I was waiting in on king salmon about 100 by 100 crib in a fishery. And I used to hear that, oh man, you know, they used to fish every 24-hour days, 1 week, maybe 2 weeks straight in a row. And I used to hear everybody, oh, these fish will never finish. They'll be here almost every year. So now, you know, it's almost like state of Alaska, and they knew that we were going to have our fish were going to diminish about this time of the years due to this economic development of open the gold mine. It'd be easier to open a gold mine. And, you know, it's almost like we're going to starve. They're starving us for that gold. All right, you guys have a really nice day, and I never had a fish yet. I'm still eating last year's chums. Okay, bye-bye.
We had a caller, John. Anyone of you want to make a comment regarding this? Maybe you can say your name and where you're from if you want to comment to each of the callers. Yeah, this is a Colin show regarding questions regarding fishing with these folks from U.S. Fish and Wildlife, Department, Alaska Department of Fish and Game, and of course the Kuskokwim River Salmon Management Working Group and the Kuskokwim River Intertribal Fish Commission. And Greg, of course, from ONC with the Kuskokwim River Intertribal Fish Commission is here. Anga Sanguluk.
Good morning, Akum Petik.
Good morning.
Yeah, Martin Fish Kapamk Kaltailing.
Yeah, he said he's calling from the. He said he's coming. He said he's calling from the fish camp, even if there's no fish to work on. Kitaki. He wants to thank the Lord for.
Yeah, good one. Pollock fisherman, not one. Wishkatin, I think after did you found good 5 years. Been quick, no another shutting 5 years more toward him, much full record. Wishkat Kinas, I look as if after Duck Reactreet when Big Chapach, Knocky Dung, Duck Luckright. Update incidental bycatch. Federal government dumpily taku maluta subsistence akunman alas coming priority of number one. Dasun good one big chakot not in Tarak from Jung Naksudin. President dumpy Sai Nagalugu. Ski gun nigluki big chakot not in Jung Takaitak Rexit. Ma of Dajuakat. Hung good a chak gang the Yukulun. Fish camp, I'm not talking about the good. You dark, duck, see, ranata, fish, see, ranata. Not clink one good day, look alone. Malist, Magut con, I buy put cuts, hit key, gallery duck, magandali, yachtoholudin. A king old, new level, we try ramus money, we duck not wood, so the king on the machine. Dan ich so zum Tisch singen leitet, go in leitet, nach singen leitet. Jud lieg halt mut lachet, bit schatten mit dem Mücken. Da wong dort na jud gut, aki in den Mücken kam am gut von jud lieg luchtet. Am gut auch noch qua, kali ich lach schein also imang, schein imach teit. Tisch schein am ich gut. I pass him on a dividend back. Kip Saria Kaima Gutran Jatran Kit Saharat. 1 year Alaska me, we the Hal and Alaska now, my Tukina.
Apirin Khudunka.
Oh, I speak out of that.
Okay. What are they going to do about the Kuskokwim River? Doi?
Yeah, I'm going to upstick it up. I think I'm going to upstick it up. I'm going to upstick it up. I'm going to upstick it up. I'm going
to upstick it up. Okay, Koyana Kalar and John, he was mentioning a bunch of things, but they had nothing to do with fishing. But he did say, what is planned for fishing this season and when does it start? Anyone?
We're looking at...
name first.
Oh, sorry, this is Aaron with the Alaska Department of Fish and Game. I just want to thank you for your comments, but we're looking at test fishery numbers right now to see how the run's building, and we're looking at possibly having an opportunity beginning Sunday. And then after that, we're going to look at harvests from that opportunity, the first opportunity, and then gauge subsequent opportunities after that.
Mm-hmm. have you guys figured out how it's going to be the fishing this Sunday?
Well, I met with the Intertribal Fish Commission. This is Ray from Fish and Wildlife Service yesterday, and they had several recommendations for a way to move forward starting on Sunday. We're putting that together right now, and we should have a news release coming out tomorrow that will explain the actual details of the opener on Sunday.
So there is going to be an opener on Sunday.
That's intended.
But they're working on the details of when, where, and stuff like that.
Generally speaking, it'll be the entire river, at least on the federal lands. I don't know on the state side.
Yeah, this is Aaron with Department of Fish and Game. Thanks, Ray. But, yeah, we're looking as well to put out a news release on Friday regarding the waters upstream of Aniak.
Mm-hmm. Lamont, did Tribal Fish Commission have anything to do with our upcoming opening on Sunday?
Yes, we've certainly encouraged this opening, and we're glad to hear that it's going to take place here in federal waters, and we look forward to hear from the state when they're going to be giving their reports. But we're actively involved in co-management and being involved in those decisions. That's very important, we think, at this part of the process.
Greg, anything to add?
Well, I'd like to go back to the first caller, what he mentioned about the increase in the amount of effort that took place with the economic development with the state coming on board. That's a real issue that we're all struggling with, and talking to the old folks that have advised the Fish Commission and at other fisheries meetings throughout, that's one of the main things that keeps being brought up, is that just a total increase in effort that we have and effectiveness that people have with the modern-day gear that came in, along with that 8-inch mesh, and folks saying that you always want to be out at fish camp as early as you can to get your fish and get them hung, but it was never a direct target for King specifically. And just the hundreds of boats that we have now with 50-fathom gear. I actually got almost like a Nunuk a couple of days ago in bringing one to old fellow in his early, mid-70s, saying that when he was young, if your net was longer than your boat, it's too long.
So the Hawaii Illuminators to make their own nets, and they weren't very deep either.
Yeah.
I mean, they weren't really targeting king salmon anyway. And if they did, they're canoes would tip over.
Yeah. Well, they targeted the fish that were there. And kings were certainly a part of that.
Mm-hmm.
And when the commercial fisheries came in through the mid to late 60s and really ramped up through the 70s, as most anybody that's over 40 or 50 years old now can remember the 70 and 80-pound kings that we used to have.
Sure, I do.
And those are, yeah, I remember them too. They used to be 25 to 30% of the run, perhaps.
Humongous.
And those were the ones that are the most productive, that put 10,000 eggs in the gravel versus the smaller ones nowadays that put only 2 or 3, maybe 4,000 eggs in the gravel.
Yeah, and as if so, and we used to sell their eggs too.
Yeah, and
they had big bucks.
Yeah, and people were kind of moved back with the commercial fishery coming into play. That fish camp did start to move earlier in the season as far as a strong harvest activity, so that people would be able to go commercial fishing later in June. So there's a lot of things in play here, and that's the main one that we got to deal with. And just to speak to that, I don't believe also that a lot of people have this concern about the Bering Sea trawl fleet and the intercept fishery that occurs out in that area. We still have ways to go, but there has been significant cutbacks on those folks to the point where they're actually running scared about and worried about their survival now with the caps that are in place. And their bycatch they have very good genetics information now, and they have 100% observer coverage, but the numbers of fish that they've caught as far as Kuskokwim in the last 2 to 3 years while we've been in this low low productivity stage for kings, if you look at what's actual for Kuskokwim kings, it's between maybe 3,000 to 10,000 fish, which when our average runs used to be in the neighborhood of 200, you know, quarter million fish average. You know, that's an insignificant part, but they are actually, we have them on the run when, this is a very simple way to put it, they are looking at being totally shut down if they exceed these caps that are in place, and we would look to increase those even further. But their industry is very concerned about having to comply with these caps. 2007, when they took over 100,000, that will never, ever occur again. Yeah. And that is through the noise that was made throughout western Alaska from Unalakleet through the Yukon to the Kuskokwim to the Nooshigak. And we made that happen. because of that.
I have a couple of callers, three in fact, Helen, Harry, and Marcy. Hold on, you guys. We'll get to you very shortly, but Helen will be first. Aguna aputi ilita kishota apikahua kishota kansumtun kuchikut kaisun nani tukakusu jamisasami toni agan rmi kiru kazaskit. Jali ukut into tribal council at Kuchtatulit ilaksugigut miskulevsi ja kuliagevsitlu jali tamana kanrut hot sait ikäjutlarni luuten kuoten uptarata naksuh pailgata. Kuagam suha waa ikilu kuagun et saa naaksi yhtsirmi kanrutsuutlaka ilmun kuottavai arulaarut kanrutsun kuoten amtri kanrutin pingaat lalrit taksuki naksunarmak kuaspisunarmak tuntuit amtri kanrutin niluki jali unanitot ni makpikmi Makuniki makpingi palakan naksutulit illini pizzaraat fiknaatin jangtu tariak fagnikasaan iklu ja huomta makut ahtsihtu maut tamakunik paikhetsan pitiukkait jang lasak fiknaaki piiaklugi toi tamana ikäyt hunaa iklu kukanrutkaa. Jim, Helen. Good morning, Helen.
For taking my call. Thank you for taking my call. I have a lot of issues, and one of the things that regulated, it causes changes. And when people can't afford mass-sized change, I think it affects our fish. And I studied fish for a while, and when they started from Asia all the way down, they're being taken to by people all the way before they spawn to our area. And I wanted to talk about if you guys have any, or are you guys studying about factory fish spawned effects? That I know Southwestern is they're spawning fish, and the other issue I had was cancer related. Why are all the fish, I mean trash we're throwing affecting our health in this area? Manna apkuja kansuraka makutrasha putka kwan kutntut lahtuk ay pasu kwani Southwestern nami kwani chamani nukkalil gani factory li lahtut kwani bililu tung kwani maku salmon nanuk tingan kutot mkan kriuk hang. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Helen. Harry, hold on. Wait till she gets an answer. Either of you want to answer what her question was, either of whichever question there was. Lamont.
Well, it certainly is. The lady makes an excellent point, and thanks, Helen, for making that point. Thanks for your concern. But there's pressure on those fish. There's no doubt about it from the time they leave up here until the time they get out on the high seas until the time they return. And we are aware of that pressure, and we encourage as much research as Greg was referencing just a little while ago so that we can understand what is happening to our fish. And one of the things I want to mention also, I think, that we need to be thinking more and more about, and I know the federal government is certainly thinking about that, is climate change and how warmer water temperatures are affecting the production of the food on the high seas in the Bering Sea there. Just like we have to eat all the time, well, the fish have to eat all the time, too. And when a tiny salmon fry gets out into the Bering Sea and there's no food for that salmon fry, as small as they are, they don't have very large stores of energy, and they die fairly quickly. And one of the things we're learning is that high water temperatures kind of reduce the amount of food that is available to the whole food chain that these salmon depend on. So there's not only outside pressure or human pressure on these fish, but there's also some natural pressures right now that did not exist back in the years when we had so many fish in our river right here. So it's the research is ongoing. In fact, what we're doing right now is going to all be a part of research as we look to the future, because there could come a time when we won't even have salmon coming back to the river if this climate change gets bad enough. But we're doing what we can do now to conserve the resources, but at the same time to make sure that subsistence folks here on the Kuskokwim River also get their share of the fish. And just a comment about you're talking about the amount of cancer. My oldest daughter got cancer in the early 1970s. And just as an example of how much that has changed, I think she was, the Public Health Service at that time told us that she was like the third or fourth childhood leukemia case that they ever had dealt with, and this was in the early 70s. And certainly all forms of cancer have become more prevalent in our population through those years, and I think it has everything to do, or at least more than we want to acknowledge, to do with the fact that we've gone to a Western diet and that we have so much dependence upon sugar now and a nutrient base that doesn't have the minerals and the vitamins and the things that our bodies need. And certainly fish provide those for us. And certainly berries, the moose, everything that's all the natural foods out here, I think, are foods that our people have been eating for generations, thousands of generations, and they've served us well. And so we need to depend on those foods as much as we can, and that's another reason why we want to be so involved. The Intertribal Fish Commission plus a working group for the state wants to be so involved in making certain that our subsistence folks are able to meet their needs up here. But again, I thank you for bringing those two concerns up, Helen. They're certainly important concerns.
Mm-hmm. This is Ray from Fish and Wildlife. Thanks for the comment about the climate change. It's a big concern for Fish and Wildlife Service. We do have a landscape conservation cooperative that's looking specifically at climate change as we work throughout the entire bit of Alaska right now. And there's a Western Alaska LCC that's working on that specifically. We meet once a month to discuss the big climate change issues and how we can go forward and fund research activities. And we have several projects on the Delta right now looking at climate change and the effects of that. And we hope to be able to inform everybody of what we see is going on and how to best respond. Thank you.
Granary. Harry, Marcy, hold on. Harry, Kidaki.
Yeah, good morning. Yeah. Kunaluku and Magut Minat, Ijuka, Guadron Sugar Alabate, Kawan, if you need some of Kel's Kigmeet, Kokokan Sugar, Good Sugar, Dama, Dama, Guizum and Koktaima, Flesh Elected Mugget, Mukshimana, Mindujara, Kusko Pogami, Makjoy, got up with Mikjoy, but at least inch. 2 inches on the other two. I'm not going to tell me so much time and not quite sure that he got time. Unnaturally, a mining company.
Radio News, Harry, Radio News, come out.
Mining.
Nipluge. Radio and good Nipluge.
Mining Kumpel Kuna, Niagmi, Nipting Naksuya, but Kawani Tusksami, Pisikit, over 10 years, Moriskum of Knatting, I have to ask the same name, Pisialin Kalunitana Pishat. Mani shall ask me, nuclear. Japan, I mean, instant dark, nuclear power plant,
He just mentioned that that they were trying to shut down a mess. There's no audio from here. He just mentioned they were trying to shut down the mining company around Tuliksek, but for some reason they couldn't do it. And then he also mentioned that he took a trip to Nome, and then he noticed a barge full of trash, and that it was going back and forth through the ocean for about 3-4 days, and they were dumping trash. And he also mentioned that the nuclear reactor that melted down in Japan, that people say it leaked into the ocean, and then some people are still saying it leaks and it's still leaking to the ocean. And he also mentioned that he hears people talking about cleanliness when they talk about apiculture and subsistence, and he just wanted to mention those.
Either of you folks want to respond to his comments?
Thank you very much. This is Ray from Fish and Wildlife Service. Yeah, the mining up above Tuliksek is a concern. It's constantly being monitored. All of the monitoring points we have from say there's been no discharge. It's above the legal limits. Of course, that's still a concern for the people in Tuliksek. Japan nuclear plant's an interesting question. I actually worked in Japan for several years for Department of Defense. And the plant, latest reports I've seen indicates it may still have some small leakage, although I think the challenge to Alaska is already here based upon what happened originally. What's going on right now is probably pretty minor, and I know the government of Japan is really sensitive and very reactive to ensuring that's all contained at this point in time. I think we'll see the effects of the initial damage, you know, for several years based upon what we're tracking right now in the ocean. Thank you.
Yeah, Corinna, Ray. Marcy, hold on a minute. You're next. Chale, I would like to Mughal Knaghli Daman Kaisu Nakhtu Makata Hitnakat Wanguja Jordan Yukni Mani. Marcy, Kurano Taraludna. Thank you for waiting, Marcy. Go ahead. What's your question?
Yes, good morning. Thank you for taking my call. I have several questions here. The first one is there going to be a net size that people are going to be required to use?
Keka, yeah, go ahead. Let's answer her questions one at a time. Hold on, Marcy, go ahead.
This is Ray from Fish and Wildlife Service. Right now, based upon the public comments we heard, 6-inch mesh is going to be the way we're going to go forward, at least on the federal side, I think. Aaron, state side?
Yeah, on the state side, we're going to do the 6-inch mesh as well.
Is that
6-inch?
6-inch, yeah.
Or less.
For state and the federal?
Correct.
Correct.
Okay. And is there going to be a catch limit?
This is Ray from Fish and Wildlife. Not at this time. It's just going to be a timed opening to start with, and we'll evaluate after that from the federal side.
Yeah, the same applies to the state side as well.
Yeah. Yeah.
My last question is, has the state or the federal government done any studies on the beavers and the impact they make to the spawning grounds?
This is Ray from Fish and Wildlife Service. We've done some studies on that. The initial allocations indicate that over time, the initial part of the beaver, the first three portions of the life cycle of any kind of ecosystem, is somewhat beneficial. Doesn't become a problem until the waters start to be enclosed by land closing in and filling in behind the beaver ponds. But some of the benefits, of course, is those beaver ponds do filter out sediments and other things out of the water, which increases the water quality a little bit. Aaron, anything else from stateside?
Nothing from here. I just echo your comments.
Yeah, can Darigan, do I?
Yeah. Yes, so it's going to be for any fish to take? Kings, rex?
Yeah, I was wondering about that. Are we going to be able to, if we catch kings, do we get to keep them or do we have to release them?
This is Ray from Fish and Wildlife Service. Yeah, during the open portion of the coming up, it'll be open for all fish to be kept.
Okay, and that includes the kings.
Ms. Reagan, yes, it does.
Okay, all right, so taking my call.
Do I talk in a GIY? 16 mention to Janice Kaita to Kata Ato Kata Kite, when he was a great famine to Kata Kata. Lamont, did you have?
I thought perhaps we should mention that it's 25 fathoms long or 150 feet long from the Johnson Slough, Johnson River, up river, and then 50 fathoms below there is allowable also.
As I understand it, the nets allowed will be 6-inch mesh, 25 fathoms in length or 150 feet in length, below the Johnson, was it? And above the Johnson, 50 fathoms.
Just the opposite, I believe.
Oh, yeah, the opposite, okay. Sorry, below the Johnson is 50 fathoms and above the Johnson is 25 fathoms.
Correct.
Let's not get confused, I hope. Patrick, thank you for waiting. Henry, hold on. You're next after Patrick.
Yeah, good morning.
Up Upyutin.
Yeah, Nitakpunga?
Yeah, Upyutivnik.
Yeah, good morning. Yeah, Patrick Pavela, Marvin Dundadura, Mukhala. I got several issues here that I want to run across with those fish and game and fish and wildlife personnel and also people here in the village. Number one, we're allowed, as natives, we're allowed to fish in non-spawning rivers, right? And we can fish at least 100 yards from the mouth of the river. But now reports are coming in that someone's cutting fish nets again, and a couple of days ago my brother's and nephew's net was cut all the way from top to bottom and part of the float line, and my son's net was also run over by boat, and there's rumors going around that some fish and game people are doing it, and we want to find out if that's true or not. And I don't know what business those, if they're really actually doing it. If they're going to cut our fish nets, why don't they give us a brand new 5.5 or 5.75 net so they can keep that fish, kingfish, and net? But, you know, we're trying to respect the closures and everything, and but we're being bothered by someone cutting up. There was a fish boat stuck up on, we saw it on Facebook, and everybody knows that that person fishing boat was, is not from around here. Us people here, we hardly get stuck on top of a sandbar unless it's like we're in the middle of the night or something, but those guys are definitely not from around here, and we want the fish and game and wildlife to do something. If they can do something about it, like I know they get grants to patrol and everything, they have all these float planes and boats that they can cruise around in, why don't they go? When before, you know, if you guys don't do this, we're probably going to start fishing in the Kuskokwim again, even before the 11th. So you guys get your ass stuff together and do something, you know, patrol or and make sure that we catch our own fish there. Because we're looking at no respect for native people around here from those workers up in Bethel, fish and game and fish and wildlife. And also, like, a year ago or so, we had a new fish and game director in Bethel. And I told my buddies here that I bet you that person, Addison or Allison, I bet he's going to stay less than 2 years
Patrick?
In Bethel and move.
Dakhli si ak pknaji bertli am le kalare but a rena shul ga kan rut kan mo bistlag mi te chagu agum kan khip di walgasu
that was Patrick from Tintituliak. He was just asking about the if the tributaries that are non salmon bearing were restricted also, and he also asked if about the rule that they have, the nets have to be 100 yards inwards from the mouth into the tributaries. And then he mentioned that his brother's net was cut all the way to the bottom, and then his cousin's net was also run over by a boat. And he mentioned that there was his one of his family members took a picture of a boat on a sandbar, and then he mentioned that that boat didn't look like any boat from around that area. And he mentioned that there were rumors that there were wildlife managers cutting nets again. That was his question.
This is Ray from Fish and Wildlife Service. Thank you for your call, Patrick. I'm glad you're here from Tintituliak. I'm definitely concerned of what's going on down there. All the refuge officers, service officers we have up here are directed not to cut any net whatsoever. We'd be very interested in understanding that. And I know that in the officers I brief them every morning that none of our officers, federal officers, have been into Tintituliak Now we are reaching out to all the villages. That's their first mission, is to go and talk with the village elders and the village councils and work with them on any kind of work we're doing on the river in different places. The non-salmon bearing tributaries, those are still open. I don't foresee any potential for closure on those. The 100-yard setback is being set up because we want to, again, protect the salmon coming up when those particular closures are in effect, just to ensure we can conserve salmon and be a little precautionary in our, as we go forward with that. Aaron, do you have anything else to add?
Yeah, I just want to make it known that, you know, department personnel are never instructed to just cut nets and leave them. We will not be doing that. If there is an issue, I suggest that you contact the state troopers and echo your comments to them, and they might be able to find leads or figure out what's going on. But we will not be, or we are not instructing our personnel to cut nets.
This is Ray from Fish and Wildlife. If you could send forward that picture of that boat that was stuck, we can probably figure out who it belonged to and kind of go from there and see if we can figure that out. Thank you, Patrick.
Lamont, Greg, anything to add?
Well, maybe on the point of what Pat mentioned of more boats going down that way, and it's most people have figured out that when we have the closure on the main river, and just because everyone recognizes the importance of fishing, you get your fish however and wherever you can, that we saw happen with the 4-inch mesh in previous years, but that it is open down in the bay. Once you get below the Kuskokwim Management District mouth, or the main stem Kuskokwim, and that's once you get below Apakakslu, the lower end of Eek Island and Papagamut, you are considered to be fishing in the bay. So many people have, and they did the same last year, are moving in that area. And yeah, when people are not familiar with lower river, you're going to get stuck if you, and that's a given. So they're probably going to be seeing more of that as long as the restrictions are in place.
Lamont, anything?
No, I don't have anything to actually add here, but I think that it is important that we realize that more and more people are traveling outside of our area to get fish, to places where they are open. And I just want to encourage those people who are doing that sort of thing to kind of keep track of their numbers, because it's really important for us, particularly this summer, particularly this time where precautionary management is what we're all trying to practice, that we're able to keep track of the number of fish that are caught so we can make accurate predictions and projections down the road there. Thank you very much for your question and concern, Patrick.
I'd like to just add to that again, because it does make a point, again, that I started out with earlier, is people's effectiveness in being able to catch like they never did before, just in the last two generations versus the last 10,000, where the resource was never depleted by subsistence fishing and the people who made it their home for those 10,000 years. And just the last two generations, the ability we have to catch, that people can jump in their boat and run down 100 miles or more and be back, you know, as an overnight trip, rather than, a 100 miles was a week or two trip in the past. So just that ability that people have, and for the restrictions in place and such, it's because of that gear that people have that was never there before. So that's really what we really struggle with, especially at the commission level, and how to balance to that. We want people to be able to catch the maximum extent we can on what we consider to be a harvestable surplus. While we still make our escapement, we get distribution. We have to keep in mind of the whole river, one river aspect throughout, and so balancing all of that is a very tremendous challenge and a heck of a burden to bear.
John, if I may.
Mm-hmm.
This is Ray from Fish and Wildlife Service. Thanks for Greg for bringing up the mouth of Costco. That's kind of an interesting question right now. Now that the federal government's responsible for the Chinook and the Chum, the closure line is actually at the refuge boundary at the mouth, which is actually about 3.5 miles below Kuskokwim Slough, downriver from Eek. And then it goes due west across the mouth to the other side of the river. So that kind of gives you a sense of where that's at. Later today or early tomorrow, I'll have a map out with those actual GPS coordinates to share with everybody. But I'm validating that based upon the regulations and the laws that are put in place right now. Thank you.
We have Henry Tikiun, Upyutin Chiumuk, Upyutin, Upyutin Kingan, Morris Akhritoi King of Kun, Ruth Akhritoi, Morris Am King of Kun. Henry.
Yeah. I know my sister, the woman, she was a little bit of a little bit of a little Wait,
In a nutshell.
Okay, he just mentioned that it would be better if people listened and understood instead of talking about other stuff. He was saying that it'll be better if people try and understand the regulations, and he wanted to know if what kind of mesh, exactly what kind of mesh size, what length, and then what those regulations are. will be for those nets. And he mentioned he has, since the restriction started, he's had a 5-inch mesh net and an even smaller net along with it. And he also mentioned that he mentioned a few times that they need to understand the regulations so they don't get taken by surprise when the fishing opener starts and it turns out that they have the wrong gear.
And so you're meeting when? Again, I keep forgetting.
This is Ray from Fish and Wildlife Service. We'll have a press release that comes out again tomorrow from both the state and the federal side that talks about specifically the mesh size and the length and all those. But as we move forward right now, we're talking about 6-inch mesh or less, and we're also talking about 150-foot net above the Johnson, 300-foot net below the Johnson, and that'll start sometime on Sunday.
And I was just mentioning that you're going to have a meeting tomorrow. Greg.
Yeah, thanks. One thing I think would need clarification here, too, and it was mentioned earlier, no limits and such, that we are actually still in that conservation mode. Things are looking a lot better this year. Last year we had a target harvest of 15,000 fish for subsistence. This year it's in the range of 40,000 fish. So during the opening that's going to occur on Sunday, yes, there's no limits, but overall it's going to be, we're looking at a subsistence harvest in the range of 40,000, which is still way short of what the long-term average is. And, you know, the Fish Commission had put forward a proposal and a plan to actually try to come up with what's called a household share that say that every household that has actively fished over the last several years just make it a 20 fish that they could go and get. But, you know, the bureaucratic logistics that we had to deal with were not able to be resolved in time for this current opening. We're still looking at possibly implementing something like that for future openings. Right now with the time and area closure is all we had available for this upcoming opening. And I know people don't at the full commission meeting that occurred here just a couple of weeks ago in mid-May. People did not want to see the delegated fishermen again. That was very uncomfortable for most. They did not like the idea of this saturated combat fishing, such as occurs when you have the short openings. But again, with the uncertainty we have in the run right now, that it will likely not be a long opening. I know it was one of the hour limitations that was tossed out in our negotiations with the service yesterday, and also in consultation with the area fish and game manager. It was 6 hours was mentioned as possible, again, because it's so early in the run. It's still very early in the run. And the that June 11, June 12 date was chosen because that, for your long-term average, at the most you're looking at possibly 30% or only 5%, but it's a median about 15 past the Bethel test fishery. But again, we don't know what the run is shaping up to be, so this first opening is likely to be much shorter than the 48 hours that was recommended by the working group. And what came out as a recommendation from our meeting yesterday was that at least a 12-hour period to get a full tidal period for the lower river within that. And looking at just getting a real good snapshot of what we've got coming into the river from the mouth all the way up to the headwaters sections. So, anyway.
Thank you, Greg. This is Ray from Fish and Wildlife Service. He mentioned the bureaucracy, and definitely Fish and Wildlife Service has a lot of that. You know, the challenge for household shares from fish and wildlife's perspective is that translates to a permit for us in order to get that allocation done appropriately. So we have a lot of, as Greg mentioned, bureaucratic challenges to get over through that. So we'll continue to talk about it. But as Greg mentioned, with time right now the way it is, it may be challenging for us. We'll continue to talk and work together with the Intertribal Fish Commission and the state, and as well as the working group. Thank you.
And this is Lamont Albertson with the Intertribal Fishing Commission. Again, I think the overriding thing that we ought to all keep in our mind as we're playing these numbers games and trying to come up with what we're going to allow in terms of harvest is that we're still in the conservation mode. We're still in a strong conservation mode, and it's precautionary management is absolutely what we have to practice here until our salmon come back to the numbers that we would like to see them. So I think that's the main thing we all need to keep in mind as we continue our fishing this year, as we start our fishing this year. Thank you.
Okay. Again, I'd just like to mention, you guys, you're listening to KYUK 640 AM right now, our fishery talk show. Here we have some guests. If you have any questions, please call in, 543-5985.
Morris and Ruth, hang on a little bit. You'll be on next. Ruth Yvonne, too. Well, sounds like we're going to be fishing out there, policing ourselves to make sure we catch only what we need and not catch as much as we want. That's what I'm hearing.
With the harvest and the forecast that we have right now being concerned, we're not going to have enough fish out there for everybody's needs, but we want to be able to provide the opportunity that we can harvest the maximum extent possible of those fish to early on in the season when the drying weather is there, and make sure that the people who depend on it the most for that drying and smoking get as much opportunity as they can before the flies hit and the weather changes, to get as much as you can towards providing that. But no, it's a given right up front that if the numbers come in the mid-range, there is not enough for full escapement or for to meet all subsistence needs, which is why the Federal Subsistence Board, through the special action that was put forward, did restrict the area to the federally qualified subsistence users only, and along with that, or to put in an allocation or a management process that would make sure that those most dependent on those fish got their priority use. And for that federal restriction, that is the federally qualified users, that means that only people who live in a community identified in that under the federal, that the villages on the Kuskokwim drainage from the mouth, and then I believe Tifaganuk, Kong, Quig, and I'm missing one, Nuktak maybe? Kipnak, I don't have that in front of me. But anyway, so that is anyone not living within the region is not qualified to fish in federal waters.
Are they allowed to fish in state waters?
Yeah,
they can't fish in federal waters.
This is Aaron with Fishing Game. I can address that. But yeah, we're going to be looking to put a news release out on Friday to open the fishery up on Sunday. Up in Stanwater, state waters above Aniak to the headwaters. And I just want to kind of reiterate some points that have been said by everybody in this room, but this first opener is going to be a short opener. I know it's not ideal for everybody, but what this allows us to do as managers is to get a good gauge, a better gauge on the run and how it's coming into the river with these short openers, because we can talk to people, get harvest estimates from those people, and we can get a good gauge on how this run is progressing in the river, and then we can decide on future openings past that.
Mm-hmm. We've got till 11:30. We're going to go to 11:30, then we'll be done. Any other comments before we go to Morris and Ruth Yvonne? They've been waiting for a while.
All right, Morris and Ruth, thank you. Just Lamont, and I'll just make a very quick comment. One of the things that's really important as we're going through this process is that we keep accurate numbers, and you're going to see that ONC is going to have some folks working at the boat harbor here in Bethel, and they'll be asking you how many fish you caught and some different questions like that. And we certainly would appreciate all the cooperation that you give us. We're not necessarily saving these fish or trying to save these fish or trying to keep track of these fish for the state of Alaska or for the United States federal government. We're trying to do this for the people here on the Kuskokwim River. And so any information you can give us is going to help you and your children and your grandchildren down the road. And we need accurate numbers to make the predictions that we need to make in terms of how many fish we can take without doing damage for later years when those fish that will be spawned this summer come back. So again, any help you can give us with any statistics that we may need, we will certainly appreciate, and we will be down at the Bethel Harbor to meet you when you come in, and we'll be calling into all of the villages to try to get information also about the salmon harvest. But thanks very much, and thank you folks for waiting with your questions too.
Morris, what?
Three questions.
Yeah.
What are your departments and commissions, all of them? What are your stands on the Donlin Gold Mine? First question.
This is Lamont Albertson with the Intertribal Fisheries Commission. We haven't taken a stand yet. You know, that's certainly something that we're aware of, and we certainly have all sorts of strong environmental concerns for the Kuskokwim River here, but we have yet to take a stand. However, we will be doing that at some point in the future. And in terms of the working group, Greg, you correct me if I'm wrong, I don't think we've taken a stand there either, have we, the state working group?
That I'm aware of.
Yeah, so I'm sure down the road that we'll be addressing those things, and we'll let you know. But thanks for your question. That's a good question.
Yes. On my second question, what are your predictions and outlooks out of all your departments and commissions once the Donlin Gold starts? That's my second question.
Thank you, Morris. This is Ray from Fish and Wildlife Service. Fish and Wildlife Service has been heavily engaged in the Donlin Gold Mine EIS comments and fish. Things like that. And in discussions with Corps of Engineers, we're very concerned about the amount of barge traffic that we'll see going up and down the Cusco. It's going to increase significantly, and we've expressed our concerns during the comment period. And I encourage everybody to reach out with the Corps of Engineers and continue to comment on Donlin Gold as to any kind of concerns you have with that coming forward. Thank you.
Oh, wait. Just to add to that quickly, the comment period for Donlin Gold ended May 31st.
Donlin Gold draft environmental impact statement am dungin un chali kan xait ni looting to gam mulkhuch ni luku tun khami lupin khkan kan khuch ni looting to gam kan khut mai khpak chali bilkhuch xait ni looting chali lu kan Ilaknaluku Donlin Gold draft environmental impact statement comment period dak plishok May 31st ami.
Ikoyana Ruth Ivan Naklung Waka
Apirton. This is Ruth Ivan I'll Momish myself and I'll talk in English and Yupik. I want to know exactly where it will be open from the mouth to what area upriver. I don't know upriver names, but my boys will know. Up to nga nakin wapen an ran kwa ikicht kan wapen bayangan kematung nat hun kisuko. I would like to know where, from where to where it will be open.
Koyucht kharutin kwa unnoko natu nareji kshit. I was kind of, after your meeting, we'll know, and you'll announce and make a new report, news release.
Yes, thank you.
Could I make a suggestion? If you guys meet, as you know, there will be very lots of boats, because people from upriver all the way to downriver and a good few people will be going down to fish. Please make the line higher way up there so every person will have an opportunity to fish, because some people don't have gas, and you need to take into that consideration, because there's no commercial fishing to get gas. So please take that into consideration when you guys make that decision. An rotan kahwaniya umyong tagluki biskluki gasait lata ilait yak fanunayak tiga natin. Like Tuluksak will, if it's open, last time it was open, they had to go all the way below Johnson. And I heard from below Johnson, it was like commercial fishing, and that's not their fishing ground, and their nets were very, very tangled. You know, they were, lots of people were stuck because the nets were torn up because they don't know that area. So, you not sweet key, I soon, Guizumihani, Kuviastin Kuvianastin Tavam Nasun Ritai, Satistahan Kafisan came at Kaska Satwania, Akitulata, Village at Tamasquita, up Kuviaskas, Kuviaskomaya Kubikiku Tamaskon.
Yeah, Akuyana. Yeah, go on. We have a couple more callers, Stephen and Ruth from Quigg. Hold on, Stephen and Ruth.
Okay,
thanks for a call. Quigg?
Ruth, and thanks for bringing that part up, because that is specifically what was included in our recommendation and for an entire river opening, and that is also the purpose for having this early closure, to get that distribution throughout the drainage, both for escapement on the headwaters rivers that were very, very dismal over the last years, and looking at failed returns up there. That is a primary purpose for that early season closure. And what you mentioned about the combat fishing that occurred last year, and we didn't want to recommend any of these rolling openings, I guess, if you will, starting in the lower river and working your way up. Again, because people are so mobile, what happened last year with the Johnson, people had to go down there below Johnson. And what happens is that those fish get hit on twice. You know, by the time they get to Tuluksak, they've been already fished down below. And that just gets worse and worse the farther up you go. So to get that holding off on this opening till we got fish throughout the drainage so people can fish next to their home village, as they always have, to get that built in. So that is what the recommendation is there for the full river opening, and I haven't heard anything that would indicate that it's going to occur any other way at this point.
Ray?
Thank you, Greg. I appreciate that. Yeah, coordination between fish monitors and the state of Alaska. We're going to strive to have concurrent openings as a coordinated effort for the entire river, as Greg mentioned, be open at one time. It's kind of ongoing discussions with Intertribal Fish Commission and the state of Alaska to ensure we provide opportunity for everybody at the same time this year. We heard that definitely the concerns about the unified management of the whole river opening. Aaron, any other comments?
I just want to thank you for your comments. And yes, within state waters, we are going to be looking to open at the same time. around the same time that the lower river opens as well. So we do provide a complete drainage or a complete river opening.
Good, thank you. Stephen.
Sir, Stephen Lexi from Nebuskak. I got several comments and questions.
Dr. Isiakpnegi, we're almost out of time and we got two more comments.
Stop talking to me right now. I'm going to start the trooper, wildlife troopers right now. They're walking around in the villages. I had to kick some out from Nebuskak. I told them to go down to the river and patrol. You can patrol in the village and protect the king salmon. So the wildlife troopers shouldn't be walking around in the village intimidating people. You know, that's not good. And the working group needs to be taken off. There's too many groups of people that are trying to bust the river. Working group needs to dissolve. You know, we have sports fishermen and Lamont Albertson, I think you may be one of them, sports fish companies that are on the working group, and it's not fair. Like people are saying, we need, they're trying to save the king salmon to go upriver so the sport fishermen can enjoy and catch their king salmon first before the subsistence people. And set nets, you know, Are set nets going to be allowed on during the opening? And there, once the set net is open down there, there's going to be people complaining about Nebuskak and Oscoda people setting too many nets. That's not true. And Gregory Ruzicka knows about that, that Nebuskak people and Oscoda people, that's not all their nets down there. They counted and said there's over close to 300 set nets down there. And that's not ours. We counted 60 to 70 set nets that belong to Nebuskak and Oscarville people, or even 50. Rest of them came from a town upriver from us. And how many set nets are allowed per people? And that's my other concern. You know, villagers, they don't have money. They can afford only one net. And these rich people come down and put two, three set nets. That needs to be controlled. You know, it's unfair for some people to something loud. You know, it's not good for us to look bad and wear. And these set nets, some of the set nets that we see on the buoys have different names. Their fish are rotting. They stink. People from downriver complain when they pass through Nebuskak and Oscoda, they smell fish, rotting fish. It's coming from those set nets that don't get checked. That's waste. For us, we check them three times a day or so or more because the water's warm. That fish is going to rot and no longer be able to be cut up and consumed by people. You know, we're not fishing for fun. This is for food. These set nets that don't get checked, take them off the river or
Stephen?
Start taking them off the
Stephen?
River. Yes?
Do you have a question?
Those are my questions, you know. And also these people are right. Once there's opening, everybody wants to fish. So more restrictions, more people wanting to fish. That's it.
Dr. Clarice Alachet. We got two more callers, Ruth from Quigg and Loretta. Let's go to Ruth and Quigg, and then maybe we can go to the question if you remember them. Ruth.
Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning.
Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Yeah, Quigg. I'm being a hurry. I have a question on the line for this coastal villages like Quikong, and so maybe Kipnik, because sometimes Kipnik people will come down this way and fish. But the line exactly where Ishkiwik or Iluqaqnik, and the original line was by Nunavik, way up there, you know, where the north line is right across the Greenhawk area, and right across from it's supposed to be the fishing line, but then they close it all the way down. How come they close it all the way down to Ishkiwik? Even it's like a private land right there. But that's a question right there, number one. Before I go to, before you answer, my next two questions is in Greenhawk, how come this, is it because it's a different district, Greenhawk Northland, all the way down to Greenhawk is open and they never close it every year? And some of us that are some of us from Carmen Creek will go get our 200 fish right now, like in one shot, some of us will get that fish while everybody up there is closed. So how come Greenhawk is never closed and the fish is going up, the fish is flowing all the way from probably Good News, Greenhawk, and up? And so that's my question. Thank you, Ruth.
We're going to go to Loretta now with her question before these guys will choose to answer which question. Loretta.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Hi, recently I learned the difference between sports fishing and subsistence fishing. Sports fishing akmana aking patuk where the fish and release takun mana subsistence ak aking yunani nakshuta panta jalisu nasun rechukula kaisun sports fishing aka umhut lahat like they do with subsistence fishing tamana nasun rechukula jalisu nichukunilgani jalisu kshuta
Thank you, Loretta. That was our last caller, and of all the questions, did either of you folks want to answer which caller had a question before we close? We're going to be done.
This Lamont Alberton, I'll address the sport fishing question that Stephen had, and I'm not sure that I understood everything Loretta had, but maybe this will help you understand that. Anytime subsistence fishing is closed, sport fishing is closed also. There's no sport fishing allowed at all during closures. It has to be equal and equal opportunity. And personally, you know, I have not killed a king salmon for 8 years. Ever since we got into this conservation mode, I've lived on, I like reds best anyhow. I've lived on reds, chums, all that kind of stuff, and I do pretty well, and I'm 72 and still trucking the best I can. So, but I do appreciate that question, Stephen. I do appreciate your concern because there is some abuse around the state at different times, but I don't think we're seeing any abuse of kings by sport fishermen because they simply cannot fish for them at this point. But thanks for calling that to our attention.
Yeah, and to follow up about the number of nets down on what has now been termed the choke point right there between Nebuskiak and Oscarville. And yes, it was abused in the previous years, and that's part of the reason that the commission last year had that cut off. We probably waited too long to do it, and this year is why the 4-inch in the earlier opportunity into June was not allowed at all. Part of that, again, it goes back to, again, numbers of people, and people are going to go fish wherever they're able to fish and with whatever they're told they can fish with. You made me think that people used to respect the different villages, areas, and they were actually physically limited, and they'd be able to get up and running up and down the river in the course of an hour or a half hour or 10 minutes or 5 minutes, depending on what size kicker you got nowadays. It reminded me of my father-in-law saying that when they used to come to Bethel to buy groceries, it was a three-day trip. It took an afternoon to come down, took a couple hours to take care of business, and 2 days to row back. So that's part of what this whole struggle and where we are in the conservation mode, and continue trying to do our best to give people as much chance as they got, but recognizing the extreme efficiency that we have now with that with modern technology gear that affects so much of all our lives and has changed it so dramatically just in the last two generations.
Mm-hmm. Right. This is Ray from Fish and Wildlife Service. Stephen, thank you for your comment about wildlife troopers. Those are actually Fish and Wildlife Service officers in the villages out there. We're currently doing an archery youth camp in most of the villages as they requested we come out there. Additionally, any of our patrol officers have been reaching out as requested and talking to the village councils and the village administration people to coordinate our efforts. We were asked to meet with village safety officers, meet with village councils, and to work together as we move forward in this appropriate management for the upcoming fish. So thank you for your comments. We definitely want to ensure that we're invited to any village we go to, and that's the guidance that I've provided all the enforcement officers out there. On the question of set nets, those are included as the option for this year as we move forward into the season of fishing.
Okay, and just to cut in real quick, Ruth from Quig, I believe her question was, why is Quinhaq and Good News area not closed, or why are they never closed?
Yeah, this is Aaron from Finch and Game. I can take care of that. I guess the short answer is we've had a weir on the Kinnectock River. We've also fly aerial surveys a couple times each season, and last year we saw a really good improvement with escapements and passage through the weir on the Kinnectock River, and that's why we decided to leave that open this year. But last year there were restrictions in place to the subsistence fishery and the year before that. So we have taken some restrictions to try to boost escapements into that drainage as well. But Ruth, if you ever have any more questions regarding that, please feel free to give us a call over at the Fish and Game office at 543-2433. And the same goes to anyone else out there listening. If you ever have any questions, please feel free to give us a call. We're happy to answer any questions you might have.
This is Ray for Fish and Wildlife. Again, any questions for Fish and Wildlife, just call us at 543-3151. That's a good number, and they will get the answer for you. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Lamont or Greg, anything before we close?
Well, I would just remind people, and I've said this a couple times, but it bears repeating, that we are under precautionary management this year. We do not want to make the mistakes that we've made in 2010, 2011, and 2013, where we took too many of our spawning fish out of the river, which means that would hurt subsequent years or following years when those fish started returning. So we're doing everything we can to save these fish, and as I've said, we're saving these fish for ourselves. We thank the state government, we thank the federal government for keeping track of the numbers and providing their statisticians and biometricians in helping us deal with our situation out here. But we look forward to a good summer. We think this is going to be a good summer, and we hope that everybody gets some fish. Thank you.
Thank you, Lamont. And Lamont is from the Salmon Management Working Group and the Kuskokwim River Intertribal Fish Commission. We've also had Ray Bourne with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife, Aaron Tiernan from the Alaska Department of Fish and Game, Greg Roziska from the Kuskokwim River Intertribal Fish Commission also. Thank you all for being here today. Hope everybody got their answers they wanted.
Kuyana.
Thank you, John.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, folks.
Thanks to all the callers, too. That's it. Good morning.